Radio Live with Bill Ralston.
11 minutes to 5. Yes, the threat of cyber terrorism is growing, and most countries are vulnerable to it, according to global experts at a conference on internet security today. They say small groups or even individuals are capable of gaining control of millions of computers, which can then be used, for example, to launch a denial of service attack on the nation's critical infrastructure. At times, when you dial helpline numbers, you think that attack has already begun, I know, but no, seriously, there could be major damage done out there. Dr. Andrew Kollerick is an expert on cybersecurity and terrorism. He runs a website, www.andrewkollerick, and that one word, .com. Andrew Kollerick is, and by the way, the surname's spelled C-O-L-A-R-I-K. He joins us now on the line. He's currently based in the United States. Hello there, Andrew.
Hey, how you doing, Bill?
Good, not bad. Look, I mean, when we talk about cyber terrorism, what kind of attacks can be launched? What's the sort of doomsday option here? What's the worst that could happen?
Well, the type of attacks you mentioned, a distributed denial of service attack, which is kind of like when a lecturer teaches a class of 100 or 200 people and they all talk at them at once. Or it sounds like Parliament sometimes. So you basically get overwhelmed with a whole lot of messages that you can't process. So effectively, you could have what they call a botnet, which are hijacked computers from all over the world, maybe some 35 million of these globally. And if, say, a million of them focused on New Zealand, it would effectively shut down whole parts of the information infrastructure. That's one way of attacking.
If you were a cyber terrorist, and before you go on, if you were a cyber terrorist and you want to shut down that, well, I mean, what would you target?
Well, New Zealand only has a few primary connections to the rest of the world via the sea links.
Yeah, it's so one cable from New Zealand to Australia, and then from there up into the United States. Yeah.
If you damage that cable, you effectively cut off the communications.
Mm-hmm.
There's also satellite communications, and satellites have been hacked in the past, hijacked, content uploaded for propaganda, and then you know, so everything flows from those two basic points of entry and exit here in New Zealand.
Okay, you're saying, okay, that's one form of cyber terrorism. Is there another that they could launch against us?
Well, now, everyone likes to focus on the terrorists will tear down our systems and shut down our FPOS and, as you mentioned, wipe out our tax records, which I wouldn't mind. We would all thank that. But the reality is, it's a lot more subtler than that. All of our personal information is out there stored on servers and databases and so forth. And identity management is a key to being able to travel around the world anonymously, commit crime, and exit on a different identity.
Yep.
So our own identities could be stolen, refabricated, repackaged, and used in terrorist activity.
How do we protect ourselves against these kind of attacks? Because we are vulnerable. If I'm a terrorist born in the Yemen, I know my Yemen is going to be reasonably well insulated against that kind of attack. But however, you know, they can take out the United States, Australia, New Zealand, you know, any reasonably developed country. You know, how do you protect yourself against this?
Well, from things like denial of service, you have redundancy systems. You know, it's just like the telephone system has multiple backup servers in case there's a large flow of traffic. But on the information side, we have to start doing a better job of protecting people's personal information.
Uh-huh.
You have to give out your personal identification numbers to do almost anything now.
Yeah.
For credit cards, banking, you know, purchasing homes. All of this stuff is being saved, processed, transmitted, and none of it is being deleted.
So the
first thing that I would suggest is there needs to be a shelf life put on all of our personal information.
Okay, so what do you do about that when you've got outfits like, say, Google Mail offering me this wonderful system where they can store all my every email I've ever done and every document I've ever read? And, I mean, I'm not sure I want it out there.
Well, and that's just it. We make a choice. Do we pay for a service or do we get it for free?
Yeah.
Well, free comes with a whole lot of other strings.
Yeah.
And so really a lot of this has to do with our choices and the ability of people to keep our data. I actually have proposed in one of my books that all personal information should be made a property right.
Uh-huh.
Much in the same way that you have intellectual property, much as the same way you have real estate.
Yep.
And the governing laws of those things means I lend you my data, you don't own it.
Yeah.
So when I tell you to delete it, you do.
Okay, you don't hang on to it. Anyway, look, I mean, it's pretty hard to sue Osama bin Laden, I suppose, over intellectual property. But, hey, listen, that's fascinating stuff, Andrew. Thank you very much for giving us a little bit of an update on that risk. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Bill.
Dr. Andrew Kollerick there from andrewkollerick.com. That's Kollerick spelled Kollarik.com. Now, it's all one word. Go and have a look. He's got several books out as well. You can find them on Amazon and things like that. Fascinating stuff. It's 5 minutes to five. Back in just a moment to find out why New Zealand is the fourth most peaceful country in the world. Why aren't we the most peaceful country?